There's been a big shakeup in Florida's public university system as Florida A&M parts ways with its president and reintroduces an old face. That comes with a political upset for a powerful state senate president who was passed over for the top job at the University of West Florida. And State Attorney General Pam Bondi continues to weather a political storm over a campaign donation from Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump that just won't go away. It's been a raucous few weeks in Florida politics. These stories coming up on It's About Florida. Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter. FAMU's Board of Trustees has removed President Elmira Mangum from the position and returned Larry Robinson to the interim post. It's Robinson's third time in that job, and many FAMU observers are hoping this time he'll be able to stay there. Here's how it went down.
So, trustees, you have heard the motion. Attorney Bars Miles, I'd ask for a roll call vote, please.
Trustee Carter?
Yes.
Trustee Dortch?
Yes.
Trustee Grable?
Yes.
FAMU's board insists it did not fire the president, but in a 10-1 vote, it approved a plan paving the way for her to leave the presidency immediately.
Trustee Smith?
No.
Trustee Washington?
Yes.
9 yeses.
Woody.
Oh, I'm sorry. Trustee Woody?
Yes.
10 yeses, 1 no.
Motion carries.
Trustees Harold Mills and Craig Reed did not vote. Interim student body president Jalen Smith was the lone no. Prior to being named FAMU president, Elmira Mangum served as Cornell University's vice president of budget and planning. Her doctoral thesis was on the topic of leadership at historically black colleges and universities. One of her first tests as president of FAMU was the proposed split of the FAMU-Florida State University College of Engineering. The two sides later came to a governance agreement that FAMU stakeholders claimed gave too much away to FSU. Mangum later angered her board when she transferred financial oversight of the school to Florida State. Some of Mangum's hires have been problematic. For example, she hired a convicted felon in her communications office. Her first athletics director, Kellen Winslow, fired the head football coach days before homecoming. Mangum also ran into problems with the State University System Governing Board over her work plans for FAMU. And her clash with the board's former chairman was so ugly, neither would meet with the other without an attorney present. When that group of trustees tried to fire Mangum last October, it failed, and students marched on the Capitol. This time around, there were far fewer students, but they were no less vocal. Student Senate President Brandon Johnson blamed trustees for ignoring students.
Last night, we had a town hall with our student government and our students, and you all were at dinner. We sent you all an invite, and you all were eating steak and potatoes. Dr. Mangum, however, showed up to a packed house.
Mangum did have some successes. FAMU was recently named the top public HBCU in the nation by U.S. News & World Report. The school has also seen an increase in fundraising and National Science Foundation grants. Mangum spoke with reporters after the vote.
I feel good about what I've done at Florida A&M. The university is in a better position than it was when I came. I think the students are certainly more focused on completion. And overall, the institution, I think nationally, is in a better place. And we have certainly provided an example and a way forward for not just FAMU, but also for other institutions like ourselves to move forward.
Larry Robinson has been named interim FAMU president. It's his third time helming FAMU. He first served in 2007 and was charged with cleaning up scores of audit findings that threatened the school's accreditation. He came back in 2012 after FAMU President James Ammons resigned in the wake of the hazing death of a band member that caused a similar crisis with the school's accrediting body. Whether the third time will be the charm for Robinson is not known.
It's a very, very serious job that you have bestowed upon me, and I accept that wholeheartedly, with the understanding that we're going to work together to advance the mission of Florida A&M University.
But Robinson says he knows it won't be easy. Mangum's departure has caused rifts between school faculty, alumni, and students, vital relationships Robinson will have to repair. And he still has to be approved by the State University System Governing Board. Also in the news this week, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. A scandal over a $25,000 campaign donation is not going away. Bondi solicited the money from Donald Trump for her 2014 reelection bid, but the money came from Trump's charity, a violation of law. It also came at a time when states were beginning to investigate claims of fraud from Trump University. Congressional Democrats are now calling for an investigation, and several newspapers are joining that call. To break this down, we're joined in studio tonight by Tramell Gomes, host of the Rotunda podcast, Michael Oslin, reporter with the Miami Herald, and Matt Dixon of Politico Florida. Welcome to It's About Florida, Matt, Michael, and Tramell Gomes. Thank you all for joining us in studio today.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thanks. So today we're going to talk about this ongoing issue of the $25,000 donation that Donald Trump made to Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi back in 2014. That became an issue earlier this year. And I want to talk about how we have gotten to this point. You now have U.S. House Democrats calling for an investigation. You now have the New York Attorney General who has launched an investigation into Trump's charity. How did we get here? Where did the saga begin? And for that, we're going to turn to Matt.
Well, it started in 2013, actually. It's become new news a little bit on the national scale, but there isn't a lot of new meat here. But basically how it started in 2013, the Orlando Sentinel, I believe, was actually the first organization to report that the $25,000 contribution to General Bondi's political committee came from a Trump Foundation. Shortly, I believe it was a four-day span between the check and when she decided not to get involved in a class action lawsuit brought by the New York Attorney General. And there were some stories about it back then, and not a lot came from it. And it reared up again when Bondi decided to endorse Trump just this March, endorse his presidential campaign. And a lot of people started talking about that story again. Bondi was an early endorser when a lot of Republicans weren't necessarily with Trump. So then it kind of popped up again. And the third, I think, sort of wave is the Washington Post recently reported that Trump actually had to pay a fine to the IRS because the foundation that he used to give the contribution isn't allowed to give campaign contributions. So that's really – that fine is sort of the newest chunk of news that we have outside of perhaps partisan investigations. The new real chunk of news is that he has had to pay a fine, and it was indeed an illegal contribution. And those are sort of the three or four steps from 2013 when this started to where we are today.
Yeah, and he had to pay that fine because it came out of a charity, and charities are not allowed to give – political contributions. Now, Michael, one of the things, you know, Pam Bondi said early on about this was, well, I tried to give it back and it was rejected. They wouldn't allow me to give it back. But she's actually been pressed a little bit more on, you know, were you actually investigating this? You know, why didn't you go forward with that Trump U lawsuits that other states have filed? And she's been kind of cagey on that one.
Cagey is a pretty good word to describe how both Trump and Bondi have been through this whole process when they're pressed by reporters on the issue. Her political committee did try to return the donation after it came out in the news that it was an illegal contribution because of tax laws, and the Trump Foundation rejected that attempt to sort of reimburse that. But on the subject of whether or not she was considering an investigation, it's pretty clear from internal emails that higher ups in Bondi's office knew about these complaints. I mean, there were more than 20 complaints beginning when Bill McCollum was Attorney General and well into Bondi's tenure. That had to do with Trump University. So people in Bondi world knew about Trump University. And so to suggest that they were never considering an investigation suggests that they were just looking at the complaints and not thinking about what to do with them. Whether or not the Attorney General herself was personally thinking about an investigation, that's what we don't know at this point.
You know, and that makes me wonder, to, you know, how can everybody possibly around you know that something is amiss here, but you don't? Tramiel, you know, what's your analysis of this situation?
Well, you're seeing the communications office in trying to really get technical here. A statement from their communications spokesperson is stating that, like, you know, one staffer reviewed to see whether or not this was something, whether the allegations of the New York complaint, if it had any relevance to Florida. So they're pinning it on one person, just a slight review. Perception, from what we're dealing with this whole thing, it just doesn't look good. Trump, as you know, he's been very vocal with how he deals with politicians before he became an official one, where he says, like, you know, frankly, he pays them and he expects them to answer his calls when time comes around. So it's been very frank. He's been saying this, so everything is laid out. I don't know why we're bouncing around the obvious. And this is just like, you know, pundits on TV and all of that stuff and trying to find some sort of balance in here. But Trump has been very clear, and we're only seeing him backtracking from his very bold stance and statements about how he handles politicians to get them to do what he wants.
And he said that in, I think it was a January 9th rally in Iowa. We actually do have sound of that.
You know, it's interesting. I was looking at the ones I'm running against. I've contributed to most of them. Do you believe it? I've contributed to most of them. And one of them said, no, I don't think you've contributed to me. They found out I did. I contribute to every. I've given to Democrats. I've given to Hillary. I've given to everybody because that was my job. I got to give to them because when I want something, I get it. When I call, they kiss my ass. Okay? It's true. They kiss my ass. True. True.
So, I mean, in that clip, you hear Trump saying, you know, I give to Republicans, I give to Democrats, and I give to them because I will call them up and ask them for favors. You know, Matt, this is, you know, some people say, well, this, you know, donation here is just a wider example of pay for play.
Well, it's the classic idea of the true Washington scandal is just basically telling the truth. I think anyone who remotely pays attention to this stuff or looks at a campaign finance report is, well, what the heck is someone giving a $100,000 check to someone for? Obviously, there's it's sort of the lifeblood of how this place works. But when you're out campaigning, when you're out talking to voters, when you're out talking to the press, you need to bend over backwards to ensure that's not the perception that you're giving off. So folks will usually say, well, donors don't support me to get me to do their bidding. Donors support me because they support me philosophically. And whereas Trump, you know, sort of broke that mold and goes on the stump and says, yeah, I give money and I get what I want, which I think the perception of how this stuff works that matches or closer mirrors with what Trump is saying. But it's sort of this thing where there isn't – we don't have an exact example of a pay-for-play here yet, but it is – you know, he told the truth, and sometimes the truth and the status quo when someone blatantly admits it in politics is the scandal.
You know, something that I noticed about this and I've been thinking about a lot is this could have easily have been a hidden donation. I mean, he could have bundled it with other donations and we would have never have been able to see it because of the way our campaign finance system works. It could have been bundled together with others and given as a lump contribution, and it would have just been, you know, lost in the ether. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about was, you know, when you make a campaign contribution, some people want their names on it, other people don't, right?
Well, I mean, first of all, the AP reported earlier this year that Bondi asked for the contribution. Mm-hmm. And so she knew that it was coming. Trump knew that he was giving it. But I do think you're right. I mean, they didn't go to any efforts to hide this from the public. It's not that hard to run a campaign contribution through a couple of different accounts, give money to, say, the state party, who then gives money to Bondi. I mean, this happens every day. And so the fact that it isn't hidden and isn't a secret contribution, you know, I think suggests maybe that they weren't trying to hide the contribution itself, which is worth thinking about as you're talking about, well, was he trying to influence policy or decision making on an investigation?
Do we think, you know, do we buy that it was just an honest mistake, which is what, you know, the Trump charity has said and what Bondi has said, you know, do we buy that it was just, you know, oops, our bad. It wasn't supposed to be paid out of the charity account. It was supposed to be paid, you know, out of another account. And would this be a story if it had been paid out of Trump's checking account other than the charity?
Do we buy it? No, you wouldn't buy it unless there weren't instances of this happening before in the past. I think there are evidence of similar type contributions being made out of the Trump Foundation, which is under scrutiny for the way it operates, in the sense that, he's not even really utilizing his own money, as you were talking about. If he had given his own funds to the campaign, he doesn't do that. He gets money that goes into this foundation for charitable purposes, and he does with it as he sees fits. He does provide some charitable work, but in one of the newspaper or investigation, it shows that it's closely tied to something that benefits him, or if he's pressured, like when during the many televised debates, when he's pressured to make donations, that's when he goes in and releases those funds to different organizations. So it's all over the place.
I actually tend to think that I buy the accounting error story with the
That it was an accounting error. It wasn't supposed to be paid out of the charity, but through a series of steps, that's
correct.
What happened.
Yeah, I actually buy that story because Trump has, through other accounts and through himself personally, and Ivanka Trump as well, they have contributed a lot of money to Florida politics. I'm not as scandalized by the fact that this came from the foundation account versus his personal account. I think that the questions worth asking are more in the line of, was he expecting the attorney general to not act, or was he perhaps giving her money in hopes of keeping her in office because she hadn't acted already? I think those are really important questions worth asking. Whether or not it was supposed to come from a charitable organization or not is sort of, I think, missing the bigger picture.
The question goes back to that pay for play. You know, did you contribute in order for whatever investigation, whatever potential lawsuit there may have been, to be dropped? And that's the question that is unanswered.
Right. And to this point, I guess, to the credit of – well, not to the credit, but in defense of General Bonney, that there hasn't been – that there has been no – not even really smoke, unless you want to count the contribution as smoke, which some would obviously do. But they released 8,000 pages of documents. Some reporters went through each and every one and didn't – there were some interesting tidbits about new complaints, and there were some things of interest in there, but there was never the one email that says, hey, let's drop this. So we don't really have that yet at this point, and you had asked the question earlier about if it wasn't for the accounting error, do you think this would be a story? And I don't, because I think the most recent hook is the fine. So I think this has dominated news cycles in the past, and I'm not sure if we're sitting here talking about it right now had he used the right account to write that check. So I think from that perspective, the accounting error and the national fervor and the political ads and the investigations are all sort of, you know, there's some accountant sitting at the Trump Foundation just like, oh man, well, I have stepped in it here.
I mean, we don't know whether or not there would have been an investigation. We don't even know if there was one that was even being considered. And I think that's also kind of, you know, part of this. I've read a lot that says, you know, she was paid to drop this investigation, but you can't drop what you didn't enact.
Well, the smoke is with this is the timing and the judgment call in actually going forward with a request with someone so high profile, and if you had any sense, even though it's coming down to shifting the blame to a staffer that made the review, to aggressively pursue a contribution from someone that is being litigated for something that's very much impacting the citizens of Florida is what is driving this, and the time factor. It's so close and all of that stuff. So It's close enough that it's generating smoke and saying, like, you know, why not recuse yourself? If it wasn't the act of requesting, or if it was sent, that would have even made things even easier if Trump was sending the donation on his own. in hopes of getting some sort of favors, of which he's admitted to being able to do.
I think in a vacuum, Pam Bondi, perhaps she's getting hit pretty hard, and she's being, you know, Trump has faced months of bad headlines, and you know he's used to it at this point. She is not, but in the context, I don't think anyone knows what her political future is anymore. People used to think she was going to run for Congress or had statewide aspirations, or well, she's different aspirations, and I don't know what her next step is. So if you don't really have a next step politically, I don't know if it can politically hurt you. So we'll see. But in a vacuum, I would say she's facing the brunt of this because Trump's got any number of things that have been thrown at him over the recent months. And this has been a bad national introduction for Pam Bondi.
Yeah. And you know, I think she was rumored as a possible 2018 like dark horse gubernatorial candidate. Yeah. As you noted, congressional aspirations floating around. It's kind of nebulous. But I will say this, though, you haven't seen much of Pam Bondi recently on national television, which has been one of her most powerful messaging tools. She was a former Fox News analyst. Well, I don't know if I should say former, but I mean, she was a Fox News analyst. She had been a frequent guest there. You haven't seen her on television as much. And, you know, you haven't seen her around Tallahassee that much. And you haven't really seen her.
Well, last week she was on Neil Cavuto, sort of defending herself on Fox. I don't remember if it was Fox Business or Fox News, one of his shows. And other than that, I mean, she doesn't usually do a lot of public appearances in Tallahassee anyway.
It's really hot up here.
It is. Yeah. It is. And we don't have very many beaches. Right. So it's understandable. But, you know, she has been more under the radar. She's pretty commonly on TV and you know, people see her around town in Tampa and things like that. I mean, I think this is a tough time to be Pam Bondi. As Matt noted, she's taking the brunt of this. And, you know, she's a pretty well-known figure in Florida, but the rest of the country is just learning who she is and whatever her future is. I think we're going to hear a fourth wave of this story whenever Pam Bondi, you know, declares for her next office, whatever that may be.
Donald Trump doesn't have to go to the grocery store and see people in the grocery store. Pam Bondi goes grocery shopping in her local community. So I would say there's a more sort of constant pressure and a more questioning from people she probably cares about more than people like us that she's getting on a daily basis. And I bet that's sort of a grinding feeling that I bet Trump isn't necessarily experiencing.
You know, one of the things I noticed, too, is most of the state officials have sort of shied away from Mr. Trump, but the governor and Pam Bondi have both aligned themselves with him while others have sort of, you know, stayed away. And I think, you know, with respect to Bondi, that's turning out to be a liability for her.
That is the other part of the smoke. That's what's making this so continue to go forward, because she's so vocal with her support, going out there at the rally and talking about their close relationship and how close she is with the family. So that is keeping it alive. So for those who are uneasy about the idea of how this unfolded, even if it was just innocent and the proximity, if you throw that aside, seeing the vocal support that she's thrown, it just keeps raising eyebrows as well. Maybe it is what we're subtly suspecting might be the case. So, she's out there supporting him, and it's not really helping her case.
You know, something you talked about it here, like this close relationship. We've heard this a lot throughout this thing. I have such a close relationship with Mr. Trump, is what the attorney general has said. Any evidence of that?
No.
Trump has a close relationship with everyone.
Yeah, other than the sort of mutual love fest. I mean, there could be, I don't know one way to definitively one way or the other, but there certainly hasn't been a very public relationship prior to this presidential cycle.
Well, nothing. We've spent a lot of time trying to get answers on that and asking about when did they meet and how did they meet, who introduced them, trying to piece together that relationship. Neither Bondi's office nor Trump's campaign is willing to communicate on it. And Bondi's office won't, you know, make her available to be interviewed or anything. So no one can answer to this. When you ask Donald Trump's spokeswoman about the details of their relationship, she replies and says that Pam Bondi is a very good friend, and that's sort of all you get. So we don't know how long they've been friends. It could be long before this $25,000 check. Could not. We don't know.
He may have adopted a dog. from the Attorney General. That's, we don't know. And I think that, you know, that goes kind of full circle, is the fact that there is so much that we just do not know, and a lot that we will probably never know about this very strange saga between Donald Trump and Pam Bondi, which is kind of cloaked in a lot of smoke and questions and more questions. But at least for the Attorney General, it seems to kind of be a really big problem for her. And that leads me to kind of another question that I really want to talk about, which is this issue of campaign finance. Because for several years now, the state of Florida has been attempting to clean up its campaign finance laws to a certain extent. It's raised, you know, the caps in favor of hopefully more transparency. That quite has not worked. You know, where are we when we start talking about the issue of campaign finance?
They did it, I believe it was two sessions ago. They opened up the campaign finance statute, and a statute that's big. It rarely gets opened up. It doesn't happen a lot. And they made some cosmetic at best changes. They got rid of a certain kind of committee called a CCE that people thought were sort of the root cause, or at least blaming all these evils on, and upped the contribution limit to unlimited for what are called political committees, which are what are in play now, and where this contribution went into. And those, the idea was to try to stop members from, you know, essentially eating and you know, entertaining their friends out of their political committee with political contributions. But I think it's really probably very debatable that's, you know, still happening. One, and two, it's largely created a system. If you look at any campaign finance report, the biggest expenditures these days are simply committees going from one committee to another committee to another committee, sort of a campaign finance shell game. And I think that is probably at the heart of some of the problems from a transparency perspective that we have in the campaign finance here in Florida. And there's really going to be no appetite to change that. They're not going to do a large campaign finance overhaul bill anytime soon. They don't do those very often. And if they do, I would be shocked if there were any measures put in place. I mean, courts have deemed campaign finance free speech. And any time that someone wants to advocate for sort of crimping that in any way, there's a pretty vocal pushback, you know, pointing at, you know, court opinions that say, you know, this is constitutionally protected.
And we, you know, this donation, you know, for our listeners to understand, it wasn't made directly to Pam Bondi. It didn't go in her hand. It went into her political action committee, which was called And Justice for All. And if you look at candidates online, you'll see that they may have $339,000 in their political action committee. And then a week later, there's $339,000 sitting in their personal committee.
That's a whole nother show, looking at the PACs and how they're, like, even the name that you just mentioned, And Justice for All, and the names of many other of these PACs, they all come out with these great-sounding names. And
they all sound so noble.
I've long said I want to start one, Floridians for Paying Off Matt Dixon's Student Loan. So I just want to see if I can sneak
in. We are now accepting donations.
Yes.
For everybody sitting at this table.
Right.
But the way they flow and function and get around the structure that is created to try to put reins on the system that we have, whatever we come up with next, there will be loopholes and people will take advantage to jump around. That is not to say that we shouldn't stop trying, but some sort of reform is needed down the way. What it will look like, will there be political will to push through, and are we seeing any at this point?
Well, but if they ever get there, what would we do?
What will we investigate?
Right.
There will be nothing left for
yep.
us.
Go home.
And the unemployment line.
Right.
Well, I really appreciate it, guys. Matt, Trammell, and Michael, thank you all three for joining us here today on It's About Florida.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Trammell Gomes, Matt Dixon, and Michael Oslin. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more issues impacting our state.